This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
This is from Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shoba Genzo, Faiyan's Fire God, the main case. Bioen was once studying in the community of Faiyan. One day Faiyan said, "How long have you been here?" Bioen said, "I've been in your community for 3 years." Faiyan said, "You're a junior person in the monastery. How come you never ask questions?" Bioen said, "I don't want to mislead you. I must confess, when I was with Master Wei Zhao, I attained the peaceful bliss." Faiyan said, "By what words did you enter that place?" Bioen said, "When I asked Master Wei Zhao, what is the self of the practitioner? He said, the fire god seeks fire." Faiyan said, "Good words, but I'm afraid you didn't understand them." Bioen said, "The fire god belongs to fire. Fire seeking fire is just like the self seeking self." Faiyan said, "Indeed, you didn't understand. If the Buddha Dharma was like this, it wouldn't have come down to this day." Bioen was greatly upset and stood up and left. But on his way, he thought, "Faiyan is a teacher of 500 students. He didn't approve me, but what he said should be correct." He turned back and went to Faiyan and apologized. Faiyan said, "Why don't you ask me?" Bioen said, "What is the self of the practitioner?" Faiyan said, "The fire god seeks fire." And at this, Bioen experienced a great awakening. Commentary. If you've seen it clearly, you have the freedom to manifest it in the marketplace or on the road. Like a hawk in the sky or the salmon sporting the rapids, there's no hindrance. If you're still not clear, you might be tossed about by circumstances, positions, and expectations. It's like a rabbit in a snare. The more it struggles, the tighter the snare gets. When a person of clarity meets another of equal clarity, there's no doubt about what is correct or incorrect, and each further illuminates the other. However, when a clear-eyed one meets a person of knowledge, regardless of rank or position, then teacher meets disciple and the great function is brought out. Tell me, what is the great function? The verse. If you're not intimate with it, when it's revealed, you'll think about it for the rest of your life. That which gains entry through the gate is not the family treasure. There are a number of koans like this, similar to this, in that, well, what I was going to say is actually true for almost every koan. What I was going to say was that there are a number of koans like this that show that the only difference between before and after, before not understanding and in understanding, is some shift within the mind of the student, some subtle shift of understanding. And although we can understand this, I mean, as practitioners, we get this on a certain level, understand this. Do we really? Bioen, when he was a teacher of his own community, one day said, "All of you fully possess an eternal perfect moon. Each of you possesses a priceless jewel. Because the moon is obscured by fog, its luster doesn't shine forth. Your wisdom is concealed within delusion, and although it is wisdom, it may not yet be realized." There's really nothing more to say. And once a student asked him, what is the place of wise ones? And Bao Yin said, you yourself must understand. And this is the essential truth. This is something that we know. I think on some level, anyone who understands even a little bit of Buddhism and comes looking for Buddhism understands that this is what we're looking for, some essential truth that we must understand ourselves. We're not coming ultimately, although we wouldn't mind if it happened, we're not coming ultimately to have someone give us that truth. I remember being willing to accept such a deal in my earlier years. And sitting there on my cushion and thinking, what would I give up? What would I be willing to give? But knowing, of course, that I was just, you know, playing with my mind, that that is not what was going to happen and it was not ultimately what I was looking for. And so it is that the path must be traveled oneself. And so we are here doing that very thing, doing that very travel. And though others have stood in exactly the same place where you are, faced exactly the same struggle or state of mind or emotion, the same doubts, the same attachments, we ourselves are standing in that place for the first time. And so even though many have come before us and have stood there and passed through, seen through, all they can do is, as Zongxi said, is scratch our backs. All they can do is provide examples, offer encouragement, point the way, which is basically to that seat, and say, now you must find out for yourself. And so we practice and train. And so in that spirit, whenever you find yourself in a particularly tight snare, just remind yourself, this is what I asked for. This is what I asked for. Bao Yin had been studying with Fayan. Fayan was a great master in Chinese Zen and was the founder of one of the great schools of Zen. And he'd been studying with him for 3 years, and yet during all that time, he had never stepped forth. He'd never approached Fayan. He'd never asked a question. He'd never asked for the teachings. And so finally, Fayan went to him. In the footnote, when it says, when Bao Yin answers, I've been in your community for 3 years, the footnote says, all that you value most is about to be taken away. Even worse, you draw a map for the thief. And so in Zen, the teacher is often referred to as a thief who steals away that which is what we most value, right? I mean, you know, attachment is a very appropriate word. We're attached. We're grasping at something, right? We're clinging to something because we don't want it to be taken away. We want to hold on to it, to preserve it. And yet, in a way, that's a kind of a misleading thing because, you know, a thief can come in and take away your wallet or your TV or your computer. But a teacher cannot, well, they could take those things away from you. If they were so inclined, but they couldn't take those things we value most. They can't reach into your mind and take an attachment away. They can't take a belief away from us. They can't take away any aspect of our identity. And so that metaphor of a thief, is somewhat appropriate because there are moments where it is as though like with Bowen here. You know, everything was fine. Everything was fine until he was in peaceful bliss, until the teacher asked him a question, and then a moment later, he's no longer in peaceful bliss. And so he might have felt like that something was taken away from him. But that couldn't have happened if Bowen hadn't left the door open for him. And that's the most interesting thing, is that at the moment that we are both preserving and guarding that door, we've left it wide open. Or not. And so in not approaching the teacher for 3 years, what's that about? Did he believe that he had resolved every question, that he had had no more suffering, was completely free and unhindered? Then why was he living in the monastery? Is he just taking up space, eating somebody else's food? It's interesting that we can allow something to be stolen, right? Knowingly or unknowingly. You know, so when a student comes, each of us who are formal students went in and did 9 bows and asked for the teaching, that's what that's about. That's saying, my door is open. I am asking you to enter and steal all that is most valuable, right? Help me to see all that I have invested in keeping hidden. And of course, in that Shokan, it's done formally and very, very consciously, so that the student asks and knows they are asking, and the teacher can respond having heard that request for the teachings. That's very important, that it's not just implicit. Well, I'm here, and so obviously I want this. No, it needs to actually be more explicit. We need to hear ourselves asking for the teachings, and then to try and continue asking in our mind, in the way we practice. And what is it that propels a person to lay themselves so open, to make themselves vulnerable, allowing themselves to be challenged about who they are, what they know, particularly given how long and how much effort we put into guarding ourselves. Master Dogen said, the thought of enlightenment can occur within birth and death, and within nirvana. It can also occur without concern for birth and death and nirvana. It doesn't depend upon the place where it occurs, nor is it hindered by the place where it occurs. And I'd like to take that up a little bit more deeply on Sunday in the Dharma Encounter. But this is interesting because in so many of the teachings about bodhicitta, going back to the time of the Buddha, there's a lot of emphasis put on the place in which we are practicing, the place in which conditions are created such that bodhicitta can rise, that the mind that seeks enlightenment can arise, that we are encouraged, brought to the place where we're asking, open, ready to make ourselves vulnerable and exposed, which is not a small thing, of course, because that generally feels like unsafe, at least, and can feel naive. It can feel like weakness. But of course, this kind of vulnerability that we're talking about is, you know, it's not exposing ourselves to the safety of to the danger of the street. It's exposing ourselves to the danger, really, of our own attachments, to the danger of the self. What is the self of the practitioner? What is that thing? Who is that one that I protect? Who is that one that I defend? So Dogen says it can arise from within the path, from within a seeking mind, having been exposed to the Dharma, having really begun to open our eyes to samsara, to this cycle. You know, that's why, you know, generally people have to have grown up a little bit, to come into practice, right? Because in that growing up, we've gotten kicked around a bit. You know, we've experienced pain. We've made bad decisions. We've been the recipients of others' bad decisions. We've suffered. And we've suffered enough and have responded to that suffering enough that we have established certain strategies that have become fine-tuned and that at a certain point we realize are not working. And so it can arise from within that, the Dharma, in a sense, the recognition of the Dharma, but it can also arise without that, as Dogen is saying. From the depths of the dark night, just the thought, there must be a better way. I've told the story of the letter I got from a guy many years ago who was in prison at the time, and he was in... I guess he had been in the general population. Anyway, he said that he was creating havoc by his own words. He was like angry and lashing out at everyone and everything. And they threw him into a padded cell, and he was still going berserk. And so they like pepper sprayed him, he said. And so he's basically like retching and just rolling around in his own filth and in this cell. And he said in a certain moment he was exhausted and he was just beginning to quiet down and lay there. And he said that was the thought that entered his mind for the first time. There must be a better way. Where does that come from? And he said that he asked the guard if they would give him something to read. And he said, as a way of like, you know, disregarding him or, you know, not taking him seriously, they just threw him a book that they thought was like stupid. It was a book on Buddhism. Says it does not depend on any place. You know, the sense of dissatisfaction with samsara is not unusual. Many people have that even if they don't recognize it as samsara. Having faith that there must be a better way is less common. Searching for that path is less common, so even more, and finding and committing to the path is even less common. And so here, Bowen is asked, why don't you ever talk? And he said, when I was with Master Wei Zhao, I attained the peaceful bliss. And so Fion says, tell me, how did that occur? And so he says, when I asked Master Wei Zhao, what is the self of the practitioner? He said, the fire god seeks fire. And then he attained peaceful bliss. He attained awakening. And just on the basis of that, Fion said, no, those are good words, but I'm afraid you didn't understand them. How does he know? How does he know that Bowen did not yet understand? What is mind to mind? Sitting on your cushion, studying body and mind of what you call yourself is that, but it's also body and mind of the human being and a human life and the human condition. It's the body mind of all beings. And so seeing into that, you're seeing into mind, the human mind. And while your circumstances and conditions that have brought that to this moment are yours, the particulars of your life, they're not that different. I mean, they are, of course. We live in grow up in very different ways, live in different bodies, we experience the world in different ways, and that's significant and real. But within all of that, anger is anger, sadness is sadness, pain is pain, happiness is happiness. Holding on is holding on, and letting go is letting go. Fear is fear. Just finding out that Bowen had been in the community for 3 years and never asked a question is telling Fayan something. Maybe it's different things that this could mean. And so he asks the question, by what words did you enter? And so he tells him, and Fayan says, no, I'm afraid you didn't understand. If the Buddha Dharma was like this, wouldn't have come down to this day. In other words, what you're holding up is not liberation. It is not that which frees us. And so it would not have come down to this time, because it wouldn't have had enough strength. And the footnote to that says, even if there's a spark of life, there's still life. Right? Like in a fire, even if there's just a faintly burning ember, there's a faintly burning ember. Dogen says, after resonating with the way and arousing the thought of enlightenment, take refuge in the great way of the Buddha ancestors and devote yourself to the practice of way-seeking mind. Even if you've not yet aroused this, follow the examples of the Buddha ancestors who did arouse the way-seeking mind in former times. As long as there's a spark of life, there's still life. So even if that really hasn't come forth from us, you know, I've met people over the years who have been drawn into practice for all kinds of reasons that aren't really yet sort of clearly about the nature of this life, not really about a deep spiritual, even, you know, seemingly even superficial spiritual motivation. It might be something else, because there are other lots of things that a person might feel resonant with, might resonate with. And yet, there can be life there that then catches fire by following the examples. And so in a sense, and that what happens, we come and the first thing that happens is we're taught beginning instruction, follow the example of a Buddha. This is what Buddhas do. They meditate, they do zazen, they take this posture. So follow that example. Follow that example while walking. Follow that example while sitting, standing, lying down, while bowing. Now, you could say, but that's just following an empty form. But if there's even a spark of life, there's life. And so by following that example, what's happening is that the student is now taking that posture. Right? They're not sitting and looking at a photograph of a city of Buddha. They're not watching a movie. Right? They're not hearing a story. They're following the example by doing that very thing. The doors never close. The fire is never utterly cold. The way is never hidden. And this is really important. It's why a bodhisattva never gives up on people. Because as long as we're a human being, that spark of life is there. Because we're alive, and it doesn't last forever. Because we are suffering, and we don't want to be. And so when Phayon said this to Bowen, he was greatly upset, angry, probably indignant. How dare you? You don't understand. And then he walked away in that upset. And it says, but on his way, he thought. He was thinking, right? And isn't this what happens if there's a spark of life? Is a person wouldn't just walk away and never think about what just happened. You would be consumed by what just happened, having just lost something valuable or having been challenged in something that you thought was beyond challenge. Or did he not approach the teacher for 3 years because secretly he wasn't sure and was afraid to find out? And so he was thinking. And just in that one simple sentence, right, there's just worlds turning, right? Stewing, emotion, justification, right? Retorts, right? That's what we do, right? Who has not been here? And come up victorious until you find out you're talking to yourself and you're walking away. And he thinks, wait a minute, Phayon is a teacher of 500 monastics, right? He didn't approve me, which is wrong, but what he said should be correct. So what's to be done about this? Well, to his great virtue, he turned around. Right? He turned back and apologized, it said. Right? And to have turned back, he didn't turn around to go back to convince Phayon. He went back to apologize. He knew that something wasn't right. And no doubt he suspected that wasn't right was his understanding. And so in that he was willing to make himself vulnerable, to lay himself bare. That was his sincerity coming to life, his true heart, his having faith in the Buddha, his following the example of those before him. In that turning around, really, he's calling himself back to himself. It's like having, you know, gotten drunk for a moment. Suddenly there's a moment of sobriety, and it's like, wait a minute, what am I doing? What am I doing? You know, so many times over the years when I would be caught, intoxicated in such a moment, right, of anger or competitiveness or judgment or self-doubt, right? And then it would grow and grow, and a new world would begin to take shape. And then there'd be a moment of coming to my senses, like, wait a minute, what am I doing? What am I doing here? Why am I here? Right? That is not why I am here. That would always eventually become clear. I did not come here to create that again. And so he comes back, and Phaon, no doubt, can see a different student approaching him. And so Phaon says, why don't you ask me your question? Bowen says, what is the self of the practitioner? Phaon says, the fire god seeks fire, and now he experiences awakening. Why? The very words he himself had uttered, the very words that Wei Zhao had uttered, and that he thought he had attained something. That state of mind that he leaves with and that he returns with, that he asks this question with, is the most important thing. It's most important. So we could look at all of these conditions, everything before, this encounter with Phaon, his walking away, yes, all of that. All of that is part of it, but what is the essential thing is this mind. He turns back and apologizes and basically says to Phaon, please teach me. I don't understand. I don't understand what I don't understand. Now he's asking for his whole life. He wants to truly understand. Perhaps he realizes on some level, or maybe he realizes this later, which is quite possible. Later, in reflection, he can look back and see what, with more clarity, what has happened. Right? The nest that he built with that understanding. And you know, the interesting thing is, and we don't know, but when he was with Master Wei Zhao, he might have had some experience, some kind of opening, and turned that into something that it wasn't. That's what attachments do. They turn something living, something alive, into something that it isn't. And then we live in that which it isn't. And because it's not true, it's not a real thing, it can't nourish us. It can't actually, it's not a place to live. And so ultimately, we either have to keep investing and investing and investing in that, or at some point we have to come to it ourselves or encounter the you know, house of cards of that. I mean, over the years, I've met people who've had an experience sitting at home. They had an experience that was in some way significant for them, and sometimes it was something that naturally happens in practice. But then what they did was they built a temple of that experience, right? With a doorway made of gold, right? They enshrined it, and that became what they went to every day when they went to sit, that experience, and they did prostrations to something, right, that had happened at some point long ago, which was no more, and which was usually just a normally occurring experience along the way. Something to be encouraged by, maybe something to gain insight through, but nothing to make a nest in. And that's one reason it's so important to train. You know, there's this interesting thing that in a certain sense we have to affirm ourselves. But if we are just left with that, then we're already in trouble. And so what is that dynamic between being affirmed by someone who has gone before us, following the examples of the ancestors, and self-affirming? And I know there were times in my own training where I would be working with Dado on something or working with a koan, and he would pass me. He would affirm me, but I had not yet affirmed myself. In my experience, it wasn't yet clear. And I asked him about that on several occasions. And he said, I understand. He knew that experience because he had experienced it himself. And he said, what you have needed to do with me, you have done. What you need to do with yourself may not be yet completed. And so do that with yourself. Dharushi says, if you're still not clear, then we're tossed about by circumstances and positions, ranks, and expectations. It's like a rabbit in a snare. The more we struggle, the tighter it gets. And really, until we meet that place of not yet clear, that we see for ourselves where we are not clear, and we see that again and again, and see that in a good way, you know, because it's so easy to see that as a condemnation of ourselves, you know, as a negation of ourselves in our practice. When we meet our own lack of clarity, then we can experience that as something that's wrong with me, rather than just not yet clear. So really, when we're stuck in something, when we're struggling, but we're practicing within that struggle, that's what getting clear looks like. That's you're getting what you came for, if you came to actually break free of that. You can't do it from the bleachers. You can't do it from a distance. It has to be real, like it was for Bowen. He had to suffer his own attachment and seeing that fall apart in order to have that shift within him that was so important. When we're in the midst of it, I'm sure in the moment, he was not thinking, oh, I so appreciate this moment. No, not likely. It's very hard to appreciate that until we've gone through it again and again and again, and I mean like hundreds and thousands of times. That we can get to the point where we can see what's happening and appreciate this is how. This is not yet being clear. This is how I become clear. This is not yet my heart is open. This is how my heart becomes more open. This is still grasping. This is how releasing that grasping takes place. This is what it feels like. This is what it looks like. It's hard to have that perspective when you're inside of it because it's painful. And that's where following the examples of the ancestors and then more and more following our own example. So when you get to that place, it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been here. And I remember the before. And I remember all the not good ways that I responded. And I remember practicing it. And then I remember it's shifting, and it will. I don't know when, I don't know how, but it will, because nothing is fixed. This is really, that's the first signs of like a hawk in the sky or the salmon sporting the rapids, these images of freedom within one's own field. It doesn't feel free in those moments because what we're mostly aware of is the entrapment. That's what we're experiencing. Right? And that just seems to be part of how our minds work. You know, as Brené Brown says, it's like when you're called in by your boss and they praise you for 99 things and they say, there's one thing I want to talk about that I think you could work on. That's the only thing we hear. Right? That eclipses everything else. And so within it, that's what our minds tend to do. That's why practice is so important. That's why developing mindfulness and concentration, because in that, there's space. Right? What was narrow becomes more spacious. What was too fast to see slows down. Right? What we couldn't access, what we couldn't, in a sense, touch, now we can touch. But what is it that Bao Wen saw as he came back apologizing and please from that place of collapse? Please teach me. Fion said, the fire god seeks fire. So he understood this. No, the fire god belongs to fire. Fire seeking fire. It's just like the self-seeking self. He understood it, and it didn't help him. Now he understands it. How is that different? What did he see? Dogen says, at the very moment when the thought of enlightenment is aroused, the entire universe arouses the thought of enlightenment. In the moment when the student is deeply asking, deeply wants to know, the whole universe wants to know. We're not thinking about before and after. We're not thinking about acquiring or losing. We just want to know. We want to understand. And it's bringing that forth into moment-to-moment practice. That's following the examples of the ancestors. It's finding that spark within yourself, that spark of life, and bringing it to life. That's what so much of this is about. And yet, that can only come to life in you, right? No one can put that in you. And Sesshin is so important for that, because moment after moment, right, in the simplicity and the bare, naked plainness of it, right, how do you bring that great force, that great yearning, right, to be awake, to understand, to see what is the self of this one. So trust that in you. Practice that in you. And bring that forth, right? Wherever you are in your life, this life is alive and powerful and resilient and fragile. Fragile. And now, all of what we need to be able to practice is here. How extraordinary is that? And so, to practice, not to try and claim Bao Wen's experience. It's impossible. Not to try and create something within yourself, but to try and let yourself be so exposed to the way that the way enters freely. So many dark nights waiting for the morning sun to take the cold, cold night away. Now, whether it's night or day, I walk straight ahead. And though the path still has endless twists and turns, I no longer wait for the wise ones and sages to appear.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.